Welcome, Red Ice members. Thank you for joining us here for the second hour. We are talking with John Cale from CosmicGnostic.com about Charleston in South Carolina and his discovery of the Masonic star map there. Basically, how different parks and monument is replicating the constellation of Orion or Osiris. And we've been having a really interesting conversation here in terms of the different places, the different stars, so to speak. And we were, where we left off, we were talking about number six, Cursa, and the square of law, as John called it, or as they call it. And the question is if you want to have something more you want to comment on in terms of this square, or if you want to move on to the seventh star, John.
Well, it's just this, and welcome again. Hello, and everybody. Thanks again for having me on the show. But this particular area, it's just interesting to walk around. There are some old cemeteries that are worth walking around in this area as well that are behind these buildings. And when I talk about the cemeteries, I'd like to point out that there are rarely any crosses in these cemeteries. They're mostly obelisks. And they will use angels' names and the whole angel type of imagery. But for the most part, I just see Egyptian-type style structures just all over this place. And so this particular area, it, to me, you know, one might say the Washington Monument that is behind in one of these little small hidden nooks of this area would be the most important. I actually believe it's the small stone structure that's in front of this bank that is listing off the originators of the Scottish Rite of Charleston. So I don't know. Do you want to continue to talk on this, or we could move on?
We can move on to number seven. I guess what we can just say is a little bit about the stuff that we kind of found in the break here as we took a pause and just reiterate the idea, or rather underline the fact that Albert Pike has a big connection to Charleston, and that the whole, basically, he was a grand commander of the Supreme Council that was set up in Charleston. So, and one source even claimed that Albert Pike himself was from Charleston. And we have to follow up on that, John, and see if we can confirm that from a few other sources as well. But just to reiterate that idea, that it seems to be a very important place, and that the Supreme Council, at least for the Americas, were set up at Charleston. So, I think definitely that you've found something here, and this would be another kind of confirmation that what you found here is indeed correct, so to speak, that they've really worked at supplanting this image of Osiris over Charleston. So I think you're right, John.
Yeah, and something else to point out is if you do have a copy of Morals and Dogma, which is was one of their most prized books of their library, at the bottom it says Charleston, where the origin of the book is. And so I've seen other copies of the book. They all have similar looks and emblems on them. So I'm thinking that it might be based out of here, perhaps.
And they could have, we might look at a situation here as well, why his name isn't on one of these Masonic stones, where they basically mention a few of the founders, is because they potentially know about the fact that many people have been studying Albert Pike now and looking at some of his more controversial comments and so forth. So they might have consciously chosen not to include his name there to draw any unnecessary attention to themselves. I don't know. That's just an idea, but it's a potential there, you know?
Definitely. I mean, I could definitely see them not mentioning most of the most high-ranking members just to not have any kind of public attention onto them. Even now, there's this area of Charleston, every year all the grandmasters come to Charleston to a Shriner's temple to discuss whatever they choose to discuss. So they meet here every year, and they announce it on the news, but they don't mention who's who, any names. Although I mean, anybody could look up on the internet to look at specific lodges. I can definitely, you know, say that, you know, if there's someone that's controversial, you know, such as Albert Pike, to not be included.
Exactly. So we'll keep that in mind as we continue here, and more on that might reveal itself, both as Jan and potentially others as well begin to look into this, the connection here to Charleston and Albert Pike. But what if we move on then to star number 7? Basically, this is the central star in the whole constellation, as it were, right around the navel, I think it is, right?
Yes. With Orion, it would have been his sword, but you've coined it perfectly. It might have even struck onto something even more important here. This particular place is located in Charleston, really close to where the slave market was. But this particular building is known as the Customs House, and looking above it, it is in the shape of a cross.
Mm.
But when you go down below and you're walking up towards this building, you are walking on top of nice marbleized checkered board ground, which is on both sides of this building. And then in front of it, going up a steep hill of steps, are the columns. Just very large. And then this is where all the customs came into through Charleston. And still to this day, it's being used. This is where, like, the Senate will meet. Senators still to this day work out of this building. It's a major building of law. And it is also the main place where people today are having their tea parties, and it's on this particular spot that there was a tea party here earlier this year, and it was like thousands of people that showed up. So it's this spot, this Customs House, is still very important. They have a lot of events surrounded this particular building. And I've associated it with the star Trapezium. I have not yet found any kind of astrological associations with the what history will tell us what people associated it with.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm willing to bet that it is something of importance. And
I say all are, so that is, in one way.
Yeah. So this is Trapezium. And this is probably one of the most one of the buildings that people want to check out first, just because it's in the main centralized area of downtown Charleston. And something of interest is across the street from this place is the former slave trading area.
Hmm. Yeah, well, the goods were coming in there, so to speak.
Yeah.
Well, again, I mean, very obviously the style of the building, Palladian architecture, as we've talked with Dan Tatman about mm-hmm. on the program as well, with the Corinthian columns at the mm-hmm. top. And you say that today is it still a custom house, or is it primarily used for other governmental as a government office, or what is it today?
I believe it's still the customs house. There's a port, like right behind on the other side of the building, where we see all the overseas and the ships bringing in cargo. They're all stacked up right behind this building.
Hmm.
So this is where like a lot of goods do still come in. But this whole area that I've been talking about, it's just a huge port where. It might not be so open for anyone to drive their boat around, but the major companies still use this area for bringing in goods.
There you go. So that's the central hub, the nave, if you will, of the whole thing there and the whole constellation. Mm-hmm. So let's move on to number 8 then, John.
Yes, number eight. This place is particularly interesting. The name of it, of this park, is called Marion Square. And straight off the bat with that, I you know, associate Marion with Mary and the square with, you know, their shape that they seem to love so much, the cube or square, which is usually associated with the earth. And Mary is the mother of Jesus, or his friend as well. And so there's this this park is in the shape of a square when you're looking over it, and they've kind of like made a walking area that goes from one corner to the other, creating a cross. And just that alone just kind of, you know, raises my eyebrows. But there's more to this place. This this park is where most of the college students of Charleston, College of Charleston, this is where they like to come and hang out and sit in the sun and just kind of, you know, kick around a football or just have a picnic. And around in this area is first of all, an obelisk, but it's just randomly on one of the sides. And it sits across the street from the federal building here that proudly has their own logos out front, the all CNI symbol, the dollar symbol. But back in the park, we have another waterfall, a water structure. Let's see, I'm checking this out as I go.
Yes.
It is in the shape of an octagonal shape, this water fountain. And they have, you know, if you look into fine detail, they'll have like these strange serpent-type fish that are just kind of building up this thing that goes into a sort of flower. And then nearby these two structures that I'm describing you is a newer structure that is paying honor to the victims of the Holocaust. I did not point this out in the film, but it's just this huge, like, iron steel structure, and surrounding it are just some of the information about the Holocaust and the Jews that were involved. It's kind of random, to be honest, because these other structures are old and just kind of just going around the idea of old Charleston. So this is a new structure, but going more towards the middle of Marion Square, I guess, let's see, looking overhead, it's towards the middle, but not really, is a very, very, very tall structure, a sort of column slash obelisk, and it has a statue on top.
Yeah.
It says the person on top is a military officer by the name of Calhoun.
Calhoun, yeah.
And he basically is just looking down at you if you're looking up, and on the front of it, it says truth and justice. So whatever that meant to them, they put it on there, truth, justice, and the Constitution.
Yeah.
And so that's just paying honor to him. It's a very brilliant structure in itself. Very, very tall.
Yeah. But not taller than the church towers, right?
yes. Not taller than the churches.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, there's a church on one of the corners of the street. It's the Southern Baptist Church. And if you look all the way at the top of the steeple, very, very at the tip of it is a pine cone.
Mm.
So that's something to take note of. I always associate these things with sort of like, if you look at, you know, certain old, you know, images of the ancients, they utilized this pine cone symbol, and I'm just seeing it being used in Charleston as well. So it's just a subtle little thing that I just want to point that out.
Yeah.
On the other end of this park is another water structure that is in a pentagon shape. And it's each seat has, like, some questions. And one of them, it tickles me because it says, is it the truth?
Yeah.
And that's all it says, just these random questions. But this is another area. It seems to like to get the energy of the more college-aged crowd. This is also where, right next to it, was formerly where a military college was. And in the images or the film, you'll see the structure, and it looks like a castle pretty much. But it was originally where the Citadel Military College was located. And because I've associated this place with the star, I associate it with the star Rigel. And this star, it seems to particularly have interest on how the sun is aligned with the star, or maybe a planet. For instance, if it's aligned with the sun, Rigel, it means that it's bold, courageous, insolent, unruly temper, hasty actions, bloodshed, many enemies, great good fortune, and military success. And if it's aligned with Mars, unruly, ingenious, occupied with mechanical matters, and great military preferment. So this particular spot, again, with its military college, literally this is where the land that this military college would utilize to do their thing. And it's another indication that this star could be an association with conjuring what's above us, depending on its alignment. Say, for instance, if it was aligned with Jupiter, then it would bring the kind of power that would bring great legal or preferment, many journeys, benefits from foreign affairs, and favorable for marriage. Yeah, there's a website called constellationofwords.com, and if you go and just punch in like a star, they seem to be gathering not just the star locations, but older meanings, and this particular one seemed to come up with a ton of different ways it could be utilized, not just what the star itself, but kind of like the way we look at the moon and how, you know, certain times of the moon can bring certain things for us on Earth, the tides of the water, or, you know, just many different things.
Interesting.
So this is this park, Marion Square, and another square. And so far, that's all I have on that.
That's interesting, Mary. And again, because in what's known as stellar navigation, Rigel is one of the most important navigation stars, and that just dovetails with the idea again that Mary is this the star of the sea. You have the whole maritime thing going on in terms of Mary and the star connection, that you have to use the stars in order to navigate on the seas. Worth
Definitely.
Noting. Yeah, really interesting.
Yeah.
So we have number, which one did we have there? Number 8 down. That's up at the shoulder, by the way,
of the constellation. The next one is number 9.
Number 9.
This one, this particular spot is another park, and they call it Liberty Square. And just on the bat, right off the bat, they have Liberty Square, and it's surrounded by these sort of pine cone little gestures just right out the front. And it is a park that is mostly paying honor to Fort Sumter. So it's kind of a two-way park where they're paying honor to liberty itself. And to this is where you would go if you were looking to look into more of Fort Sumter. And so this is another park where they have these just sort of atmospheric little things that are of interest here. You walk in and you see this little circular park that basically are just these stone square structures that are surrounding each other, just going in a circle. And each one has a quote from various people speaking about liberty, Harriet Tubman, Albert Einstein, Benjamin Franklin, and so on, just these quotes. And so anything when I see like square stone structures laid out in a certain kind of way, even if it might mean something outwardly, such as liberty, I kind of wonder what it could do in a sort of sense of what people are interested in magic would want to utilize it as. I mean, there's kind of a two-way aspect about this that I think that like they have these structures to sort of pull in the energy. Like, what is a person thinking when they're thinking about liberty and freedom? It's sort of like you're kind of putting that energy out there. And so maybe like there's this kind of a resonating point where they could utilize that for their own agendas. But when you go up to the memorial of Fort Sumter, you go upstairs and you're just kind of walking in this open space. And it leads to, at the end, there's this a television and then a square of brick that is the first brick that was shot into during the Civil War. But there's these seats that kind of lay out sort of like a church, and the structures that are above this small little section of the building where you sit down is sort of like pyramid in shape. So you have to walk through them, and it's just I just wonder why they chose that for this spot. But you know, they could have done anything with this. They could have chosen many different artistic expressions of structure, but they chose these sort of things, stone structures utilizing a pyramid kind of like thing that you have to walk through, and then at the end they place the bricks to where it's a square.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they could have, like, not broken up the square to be a square and just kind of, like, filled in a wall with these the remainder of these bricks and then fill it in with new bricks, but they didn't do that. They chose to put it in the square. So I always question these things.
Yeah.
And, of course, above this stone representation of the bricks is a television for their programming, whatever they want to tell you.
Do they run things on there sometime, or is it just a screen?
Well, every time that I've happened to show up there, it's not on. But if they say, for instance, to say there is a day that they were celebrating maybe the Civil War and there was a lot of tourists attraction going on, they would probably have it on. They would probably have speakers. When I took these photos, I went on off days so that there wasn't many people running around, you know, filling the photos and whatnot, which is very difficult in Charleston because it gets very congested with a lot of people from all over just looking at these things.
Gotcha.
But this particular area also has another little spot that shows the American flag, and it's in front of this half-circle structure that has water going down into it, and the bottom of the bricks are old Charleston bricks. Mm. And I call it the resonation station, because you can kind of walk into this little area and just, you know, you're just surrounded by the flowing waters in front of these stone square structures that are surrounding it in sort of a rainbow kind of like way. Hmm. And then behind you would be this very tall flag for an American flag.
Yeah.
And then on the other side of it, there are these flat stone structures that have the entire Constitution written on them, and with some quotes from a couple people,
yeah,
about freedom and not being enslaved. And so this is Liberty Park.
Interesting.
And yeah.
And some of the quotes, we will put up these pictures, of course, so people can read them for themselves. But some are, well, some are a little bit more eerie than some other ones. They're talking about how to subdue liberty and freedom. Some of them, you know, this is they're interesting. Okay, I understand they might be to ask that question to people who walk by, to also realize how easy it is to not or lose your freedom or your liberty. But some of them can definitely be questioned. We'll put them up and people can read for themselves and do their mm-hmm. own interpretation of that. But it's interesting. Yeah. So these are random around some of these stones with the quotes on them that you've shown here. Yeah.
Yeah, they're just, they're not necessarily, like, for instance, if you have a monument and you're trying to educate people about these sort of things, it would seem that there would be some sort of sign up that would say, hey, this is what this means, and this is when this was built, and these masons did this. But these little things, this little particular spot with these stone structures with the quotes on the bottom, there's no indication of what it's all about. It's just they're there.
Hmm.
And that's it.
Yeah.
And I mean, they do kind of paint it in a sort of tourist like way, but I'm kind of looking at it just from afar, just seeing what it does to people in a psychology of, you know, maybe like in a deeper sense of like what it does to us when we go and walk through these areas. So I'm just looking at it in that kind of way.
Yeah.
But for Liberty Square, I've associated this place with the star Sif, or Safe, and it means the sword of the giant.
Hmm.
And I kind of think this is sort of paying this image, or this meaning, the sword of the giant, could maybe reference the honor to Fort Sumter, the flag, all these sort of things, or it constantly is talking about Fort Sumter right here.
Yeah.
And the building itself, the memorial to it, it's kind of built in a typical Masonic structure that you see lodges, which is rather plain.
Yeah.
It's usually like, at least in the South, I found that the lodges are the most plain buildings in all the area. They're usually straight up, just with a bunch of bricks, maybe with a flat top or an angled top. But other than that, there's nothing more to it.
Hmm.
And so I kind of look at it that kind of way as well.
Yeah, see what you mean. Okay, so that's interesting. That's basically Liberty Square. And this, you mentioned the sword of the giant.
Mm-hmm.
If we looked at it from the point of view of, because you mentioned at the beginning as well that we have two different ways we can look at Orion or Osiris,
mm-hmm.
and you chose one of them where he holds a spear pretty much, but a few of them holds a sword as well. So this could be alluding mm-hmm. to the sword of Osiris, right?
Yes, it's a possibility. This my artistic rendition of this layout, it could be made different ways. This was just my own kind of touch to it. But that's how I see all throughout history, all these depictions of Orion, how he's drawn. It's always to the artistic expression that you can see the little subtle changes from picture to picture.
Yeah.
And that's how I've also seen some of the stars being utilized and some of them not being utilized to make that image, I guess.
Exactly. And potentially to harness a certain kind of energy, meaning that they put weight, so to speak, into certain stars because they represent certain things. And that's the energy that they want to go for, so to speak. That's what they want to harness, that type of energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely.
So let's see here. We have we talked about Liberty Square now then, and why don't we move on to the basically the last star in the constellation then, right? Number 10.
Yes. Well, number 10, this one is particularly fascinating to me because by this point, I've ran out of parks. And I was like, there's got to be something that's very significant about all these structures. And if indeed it is leading up to something, it needs to be an area of Charleston that's very important. And it needs to be sort of north of all these structures, kind of away from everything. And would, by this point, to me, would represent the star Sirius. A lot of people that are looking into these star maps, they generally utilize the typical Orion layout, and they like to associate the main star discussion to be with the Pleiades or Abaddon, and I don't think so in this particular situation because I'm looking at it. Everything flipped upside down, and if you associate this with Osiris, then Sirius would be very important.
Yes.
Sirius is like the friend of Osiris. Let's see here. I have a quote. Albert Pike says that he was Sirius, or the dog star, the friend and counselor of Osiris, the inventor of language, grammar, astronomy, surveying, arithmetic, music, and medical science, the first maker of laws and who taught the worship of the gods and the buildings of temples. And I've also, I don't have the quote in front of me or a source, but I've heard that he has a lot of influence with death and resurrection. And so I was thinking about this and trying to look around Charleston, and I found the place where all the old Masons were buried. This is where they have been put for the most part.
Yeah.
And one of the main cemeteries, which is the largest, is called Magnolia Cemetery.
Mm.
And, I mean, I could go as far as saying that a magnolia flower is a five-petal flower, or it could be a association with the star. But even so, you enter this cemetery, and the very first structure that you see is this huge iron structure, and it's a very large cross that's got a ton of embedded symbols within it. The very center of the cross is a Celtic cross, and in the center of that is a pentagram, a circle with a star, a pentacle. And on each arm, I guess, the left and right sides, you also have these pentagrams, and they go in threes on each of these points. The top part of the cross also has this. So you have the three, the arm and the top of the cross, and then the middle of the cross with these stars. And there's also there's just so much symbology just within this one thing.
Yeah.
Behind it, there's rays of light coming out of it. And ironwork is very important to Charleston. It's kind of like side by side with stonemasonry. The Masons also love to use ironwork around here.
Hmm.
But Yeah, it's all over Charleston. Just strange, like the houses are covered in it. John Rutledge's house is a perfect example of the ironwork that they would use.
And this is the house that you mentioned in the first segment that you looked at?
Yeah. In the first segment, that house alone, I mean, somebody could probably write a book on that, on that person and on that house. And it's had many people building upon it. There have been architects that lived here in Charleston that helped build Washington, D.C. It just goes on, the history of this place.
Yeah.
But back to the structure. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I just wanted to run this by you as well in terms of another correlation, why I think you're right in terms of, overarching the idea that this is serious. And the fact that you've connected it with the cemetery, and especially a Masonic cemetery, because in The Serious Mystery, written by Robert Temple, he correlates the star Sirius to Anubis, obviously the dog of Egyptian lore. And Anubis, he takes his name because he has a connection to it's his funerary role. He's the dog of the underworld, pretty much. And because the one who goes to the land of the West, the sun goes up in the East. Therefore, the East is connected to life in one way, and West is where the sun goes down. Consequently, dies symbolically. So Anubis has a connection to death and funeral. And so you're spot on here, I think.
Yes, and so this is just the entrance of this place, and it's if you're looking above it. You can see just like the further you go in, you'll see these more circular type of areas of the land. And when you start outside and going inward, it becomes more and more apparent who's ruling this particular cemetery. Outside, you'll see angels and crosses. But then like you'll see, the further you go in, you see more mausoleums, which were families would have their dead buried inside of these structures. And so the further and further you go in, you start to see obelisks. This gigantic obelisk that probably are like 20 feet tall in itself. They're just very strong in their imagery. And a lot of these families, by the way, are still in power in Charleston.
Okay.
The rulers of Charleston have not died out completely. They're still here.
Yeah.
And but this isn't the only cemetery. There are a few others, but they're small in nature. But this particular one is the most massive. And the further you go in, I kept seeing obelisks, and by this point, I was like, all right, I need to find something very significant here. Just something that's going to shout out to me that this is it. This is the place. And by the time that you hit the very middle of this area, you run into a quite obvious structure. It's a mausoleum, and it is a pyramid.
Yeah.
Itself is probably 15, 20 feet tall. It is a four-sided pyramid. Even at the cap, at the top, they seem to use the different colored stone. I don't think it's gold, but, it's just to differentiate, I guess, the symbology, how, the Egyptian pyramids might have utilized gold at the tips of their pyramids. But this person, this family, his last name is Smith, and above the doorway of the mausoleum is an hourglass with wings.
Yes.
So only really in time, maybe they're saying only in time will they truly reveal themselves, or that you will see who they are. I don't know.
Yeah. Sheesh. So this is a family tomb or mausoleum, pretty much. Multiple people buried in there, or this is maybe the memories where people go to, recognize the memory of these people or the family, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know if they're still inside, but there is a list on the front of the people that, I guess, up to a certain point were buried into it.
Yeah.
But there's a doorway. It's an iron doorway, and it just happens to be painted green. I take little subtleties like this because this is what it meant to them, I'm sure.
Mm.
Like when they were painting this, of all colors, why this ivory type of green color? And so I just look at these sort of things and kind of wonder and look around. And, I mean, there will be some crosses in the area, but for the most part, there's very little. And I mean, I'm not from Charleston. I've lived a lot of my life here. I've lived all over the country, and I've visited all over the world. And I've always just felt that this area would be predominantly Christian in a stereotypical sense. But yet, the further I've gone into this, it's quite seemingly very occultic in nature, at least at one point when they were building this place, they decided to use their Masonic roots, which I don't know. To me, it's their religion.
Yeah, yeah. So what do you think about the connections, again, between, you know, if we look at Masonry or Christianity or even in that sense Judaism as well, and that to me at least, and what we've been discussing in many different programs is that they are actually all connected in one way, and people might mm-hmm. think that there are different denominations, and to one degree that's true. One of them can be considered to be the exoteric version of the same thing, and one is the esoteric version of the same thing. But to me, they seem to blend. For instance, one of the monuments inside the cemetery that you've taken a photograph of is mm-hmm. a obelisk, and you have a Christian cross right at the top of it. You know,
yeah,
we see this
yeah.
blending going on all the time, you know?
Yeah, they tend to seem to blend everything that they can, no matter where it's from in the world as far as symbology goes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really a root of Freemasonry, is that they're literally taking all the knowledge and uses of many different cultures and then hiding it for themselves in a way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not, I mean, these people might be keeping it all open, but today you ask a lower level Mason and he just thinks it's, you know, a group of men just thinking of ways to benefit the community. And, but the further you go into it, the less it seems it's about that, and the more about becoming another kind of human that possesses a power that the other people can't have simply just because they're not on that level
yeah.
yet,
yeah.
or if they're not selected to be.
Hmm. Well,
like this, there's an interesting perspective. When reading their literature, they seem to not like Gnostics very much. History seems to point that these sort of people with knowledge, or that we are calling Gnostics, were people that kind of traveled gaining knowledge, but at the same time spreading knowledge and
yeah.
giving it out to people.
Yeah.
And these people seem to be, they were doing the same exact thing. Yet they are saying, no, we got to keep it secret, and even keeping it for myself, you know,
mm-hmm.
for their own uses and power. And so I don't know mm-hmm. what to make of it still. I've been studying it for quite some time now.
Yeah.
My grandfather, he was a high Mason. I have his certificates. And he himself seemed to be very good in nature. I'm a kind of person that can sort of sense right away if you're kind of a mean, violent type of person, or if you're just generally a good person. And growing up as a kid, I never had these sort of feelings that he was involved with something that was like you know, could potentially be a part of a control system over humanity in general.
Yeah.
And so, like, a lot of this is, you know, kind of going through a personal trying to understanding that there might be people that are involved with this that are genuinely good, that are high-ranking people.
Yeah.
But then you have these, like, few that they're obviously taking it and they're just going with it as far as they can to control the world. So how do you pick them out, you know?
Yeah, well, exactly. It's a good point as well, you know, because, again, this isn't, we pointed out many times during the show when we talk about the Masons generally, it's not about Mason bashing per se, but it's also about recognizing the fact that they have a network, in some cases in more underground, a secret network in that way, and many people in places of positions of power may have been using this underground system that is in place in order to pull the strings behind the scenes, so to speak, and that's a question that comes up all the time, you know. And I think you're right in that in that way, by pointing that out too, that just because you're a Mason doesn't mean that you are part of an evil plot to control everybody, you know. But and so it has to be on a individual level, a person to person level, in that sense. But I mean, overall, you've certainly stumbled over the plan of Charleston in that sense, and what that potentially have meant for the history of America as well, in terms of wars, you know, the Civil War. And and basically the war connection, which I think is really, really interesting, you know. And then you have the connection between military. Military have lodges themselves. And part of that has been, at least in the past, a lot of those generals and so forth have been involved in Masonry. And that seems to be a connection. I don't know how it is these days and if that's still the case. But in some cases, it probably is, and a lot of high-ranking people within the military has some kind of lodge connection, or they're in part of a military lodge or something like that. But overall, John, where do you go now in terms of research? What do you feel that you want to? Do you have something that you want to tie together in terms of research, or are you just going to continue studying the things that you already found, or do you think that this could expand even further? You might find other star constellations in Charleston alone. Where is it taking you?
Well, basically, I feel like I've opened something way, way deep. I've stumbled upon this. Let me put that out there, because if it weren't for my disawareness of these things, not that I believe in them or that I use them for my own or anything of that sorts, but I've become aware of these sort of aspects. And through that, I've fallen and looked up and I've found something that could be possible. And so now, like, I'm just simply trying to make a more connection to these spots, to their old meanings. And then at the same time, I'm sure this is going to open up a ton of other doors, more questions that I just probably don't even understand right now. It's the history here is so deep that you know, it's mostly focused upon the wars here, the historical nature of the military, and this history in general. But it seems like there's not very much out there concerning Freemasonry in general for Charleston. And so I'm hoping this will lead me to go further with it, to look deeper, to understand more. And I mean, I'm even open to even Freemasons coming to me to discuss this, because there's so much history here that I'm sure that if they're not aware of this, that they might themselves be interested in this.
Yeah.
But I'm also, I'd like to look at these things also in another way. If this is not something that is conscious, then I'm putting out there that the possibility that this could be an unconscious adult structure, like consciousness in general, a group of people thinking a certain way could have, you know, unconsciously laid these things down, where another force that's larger is conducting. Does that make any sense?
It does. Yeah, you know, I know what you mean, and that's been a recurring question in many times, you know, on this program, in terms of when we discuss these kinds of patterns, where is the conscious, you know, designer behind this? Again, because in many cases we don't have access to the records on who designed the entire town. And as you say, since it's been developing over such a long period of time, one wonders, you know, in addition to that, does that mean that it's a long-term plan? So let's say that the architects and/masons of the town who goes in to join the lodges in Charleston, let's say, they continue this path, so to speak, of building Osiris down into the architecture of Charleston. Is that the case? You know, and then you need that correlating information from the Masons themselves. So the question is if they would give that out, though. I doubt that, but it's definitely worth, you know, following up on and try to find out more about it, you know?
Yeah, there's just so much. And this is, like I said at the beginning, the first segment, this is a research project that's in its infantile state, that is just very early on, and already there's so much just to question and ponder about.
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm doing here in Charleston, and just having fun with it, really.
Yeah, well, it is fun. It's an exploring thing, and at the same time, you learn some interesting history as well, and I think that's a really good thing, you know, and bringing out some of this stuff. And again, just to reiterate what we said at the beginning of the show, that this is also about people listening out there who can check this out in their own town where they're from and see, to you know, begin to discover if there's other patterns. For all we know, that this might be, and probably actually is, littered all over the, you know, not only the States, but in Europe and in other countries as well. So it's a good thing to point out, John, and you've done some great work here in terms of revealing some of this stuff. So keep up the great work and keep at it. And hopefully we can discuss more as more things hopefully reveal themselves in your research, John.
Definitely. As time goes on, and I'm going to be posting a paper with all this information that I've been sharing on this show in the next week, hopefully. And it's all going to be rough as in terms of information, but what I'm hoping is that as time goes, these papers will continuously build with more packed information, and that will eventually lead up to a book. But what I wanted to do is to have it out there in its earliest forms, so that people who might know more than myself that could, you know, send their information along to add to it.
Yeah.
And just to put out also the idea of just going out and exploring your world. Get out of the house, get out of in front of the computer, and just kind of, you know, enjoy what's around you and just wondering what's going on in this world, while we still have that, while we still have now, I guess.
Exactly. You're absolutely right, John. Couldn't agree more. Please mention your website again for us so people know where to go to find more information.
It's over at cosmicgnostic.com, and you can just go over there and check out the films. I do podcasting that, it's not just on this subject, but on just many different areas of the strange and just interesting aspects of this life and this world, universe and whatnot. You know, I write, and it's what I do with a passion, and it is a place for people to get involved if they want to. But that's where I am, cosmicgnostic.com, and I just want to thank you, Henrik, and Red Eyes Creations for everything you guys are doing. There's just so much out there, and you guys are definitely a major important part of it all.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, John, and thank you for coming on the program. And keep up the great work, and let's stay in contact then, and let's see if we can do another program here down the line when more information reveal itself. But again, the website, cosmicgnostic.com, we'll link up from Red Eyes as well. Take good care, John. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and take care.
Okay, that's our program with John Cale. Thank you for listening. We'll be back soon with more radio. Kyle Hunt on the Gods of Technology, Michael Tesserion on Striking the Root of the Problem, Sabina Dvida on electromagnetic pollution. We have Scott Tips with a Codex Elementaris update. He's returned from the latest Codex meeting in Germany. And we have Joel Slate coming on the program to talk about psychic vampires, energy predators, and parasites. My thanks to Fredrik and Elizabeth. Take good care, and we will talk more soon.